Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Greg Branica, a cosmochemist, a staff scientist at Lawrence Livermore Labs, and the author of Impact, a new book about asteroids and things that fall to Earth. But reasoning backwards, like a detective. No, as a detective, Greg is going to take us to the asteroid belt and what the asteroid belt and other objects in our solar system called planets, not all of them are planets, but it's important to mention that the building blocks of planets are everywhere, what they tell us about the formation of our solar system. So far, Greg, my understanding is the planets have moved. Why is the asteroid belt where it is after Mars? What does it represent?
That's a great question, and you're right. The planets have moved over the course of history of the solar system, and particularly the large planets, Jupiter and Saturn. They encompass a huge amount of mass in our solar system that's not in part of the sun, and their kind of gravitational interactions with the sun are what cause things to kind of move around because they're so large and they play such an important role. And the reason the asteroid belt is where it is because of this movement of the planets. There are different resonances, basically, kind of zones that are gravitationally, well set up to be. And that's one of the zones where a lot of the sweepings from the asteroid or sweepings from the solar system ended up in that asteroid belt.
And the asteroid belt is the origin of many of these rocks that fall on Earth, and not entirely, but many of them. And they're very large asteroids, and then they're small asteroids. And I understand there have been collisions, and sometimes you can walk the cat backwards to where the collision took place. There was a NASA probe to Ceres and Vesta. Is that the other one?
Yeah.
And are those planetesimals or large asteroids? There are many words for them. Are they the origins of some of our meteors? Have we linked things that fall to Earth from those large asteroids?
Yeah, particularly Vesta. We're able to kind of match what we know Vesta is made of from spectral lines using these probes we send up and ground-based telescopes to samples we have on the ground that we can look at in the lab. And there's a pretty good match. And so we believe a lot of these samples, or at least one group of these samples, has come from Vesta. And we've done this with things like Mars as well, the moon, and we can and kind of figure out where some of these meteorites are coming from, at least which bodies they're coming from.
You mentioned Mars. We have several rovers on the surface of Mars. Two of them are sleeping, Oppie and Spirit. Two of them from NASA are very active, Percy and Curiosity. The Chinese have a rover, Zhurong. We have many missions planned there. You have pieces of Mars now. What have we learned from the meteors? First of all, how did they get here? And what have we learned from them?
Well, they get here by impacts, actually. So you have rocks that are floating around space, and they hit Mars. And then they kick off pieces of Mars that end up flying to Earth. And we just kind of get lucky enough to get the way. So that's how we have pieces of Mars, which is great because we haven't brought back samples yet and hopefully will soon. But that's how we have pieces of Mars in our collection.
And you can identify Mars from other ejecta that comes our way. You can say this is clearly Mars. Your ability to discern the chemistry and the isotopes of an asteroid.
Yes, exactly. And one of the main ways that we've done this is due to some of these probes we've set up. For example, we're able to measure the atmospheric gases of Mars in the 1970s. And because we knew what the atmospheric gases were like, we saw some of these kind of weird meteorites that didn't fit in with other classes. The gases were measured in these, and they matched exactly with what was found in the Martian atmosphere. So that was kind of the, silver bullet, I guess, to tell us those samples are actually from Mars. So there's a lot of different chemical and isotopic signatures. That was one of the main ones.
Do we have pieces of the moon here? Do your meteorite collection identify not only the moon, but what side of the moon? The face of the moon is quite different than the backside.
Yes, we so obviously we have a lot of samples that were collected in the Apollo and Luna missions. And we have, I think it's something like 300 meteorites that are also from the moon. And obviously with the Apollo samples, we know exactly where they're collected and it's well documented. Unfortunately for the meteorite samples, we know they're from the moon, but we don't necessarily know where from the moon they are. So we definitely do have samples from different parts of the moon, but it's just unclear as to where exactly.
I learned from you that the moon is an important metric. When it was born or created or resulted from. The story I have, Greg, is that a Mars-sized planet collided or brushed alongside the Earth and turned both objects into molten, Earth and what was left of the Mars-sized planet, unless the moon is made up of reconstituted everything, a little of this and a little of that. And the reason that's important is not because it's speculation, but because at that point, you report that it is hard to believe that there would be anything credible that could become organic on the Earth because of the heat. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you summarized it very, very nicely about, you know, kind of how we think the moon was born, basically with that large impact. And when you have a flash melting of an entire planet, if life was here prior to that, it would be extinguished. It's just too hot. The temperature is just too great for anything organic to stick together. So it would be totally sterilized at that point. So you can speculate whether life existed or not before then. I think it's a pretty safe bet to say during that event and just after it, no life on Earth existed.
And that is where we now turn to analyzing what we've have of meteors that have fallen to Earth, what we have of samples that we've returned from the moon, what we look forward to for our samples from other planets, for example, Venus and other moons, what it tells us about the origins of everything, water, organic, complex organic molecules. The word life is too inarticulate. I'm just going to say we have building blocks that are everywhere. And when we come back, how is it that Greg and his colleagues do their job with the instrumentation available to them today? The book is Impact, How Rocks from Space Led to Life, Culture, and Donkey Kong. Greg Branica is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds low after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.